How many downloads of Jim and Bill It's Another Day podcast?
Today, the podcast show has fetched 400 million downloads since its start, and an average of 350,000 downloads per episode, about 3.9 million downloads per week.
Well, hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I am Bill Knight. Well, you know what? It's going to be an interesting week. Yeah, there was another accident, an air accident on the ground in Scottsdale, Arizona. I guess there was a passenger jet that was waiting for instructions or whatever, and a Learjet comes in and lands, and its nose gear breaks, so it kind of skids to the side and runs right into the jet. Now, I understand this happened yesterday afternoon, so I'm sure a lot of details have changed, but there was one person confirmed dead, and you know, there could be more. I don't know.
Well, you know, what was the day before yesterday? They had on the runway, they had two planes collide their wings. I mean, there are things happening at the airports right now that haven't happened in years, you know?
And they're all coming to fruition at once. And, you know, it's kind of like, are all the chickens coming home to roost from all the wokeism, you know, like the air traffic control maybe giving wrong information? But that was mechanical and maybe a combination of air traffic. And I'm just sitting there going, is it orchestrated more than just a happenstance?
If I remember correctly, when Ronald Reagan fired the, I want to say PATCO, the air traffic controllers, they went on strike and they were ordered not to. They stayed out anyway. He said, either go back to work or you're going to lose your job. And they challenged him, and they lost their job. So he hired a whole bunch of new people to be the traffic controllers. But they were trained, if I remember correctly, by instructors and by the military. So they weren't just shoved in there to fill a quota, you know, which I think is the case. I'm not saying that the people who are DEI hires are untrained, you know. I think they have some training, obviously, but I don't think
they have proper full training.
No. For example, they would be apprentices, right, in the old system. All of a sudden, they're put on the front lines right
well,
now.
Well, let's back this bus up, so to speak. You know, DEI, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. With that being said, that doesn't mean you're not qualified to do a job. Specifically, it means that you may not have the gravitas, the knowledge at this point in time that you were hired to do the job. You weren't vetted for your skills. You were vetted because you fit a certain diversity, equity, and inclusion agenda. Now, with that said, that doesn't mean you can't be an air traffic controller or any of the above or whatever the job is. But you should get the training for it before you're considered. Not because of, you know, because that's a different kind of prejudice or racism, whatever you want to call it. You
that know, like shouldn't even come into play here.
No,
it should be qualifications. Period.
Qualifications. Period. You know, that's like saying, you know, oh well, you know, you're black and you're white. Oh, okay, you're white, you get the job. No. It's like, who's ever got the most skills? If the black man has the most skills, even just a small percentage more, dude, you got the
job.
Do
you know what they found out, though, from this accident in Washington? They found out that the system is incredibly antiquated. We're using computerized software that is like 25, 30 years old. And there's so much out there now that would make it so much more safe in the air. You know, there's software that can predict things, back this off, or watch this guy. It's looking into the sky for you. Do you know what I'm saying? A lot of the new software, whereas the old software just showed you, here's the planes and here's where they are. You know, the new software they have, which they haven't implemented, could assist air traffic controllers. Okay, I've been informed that you're too close. Back off, so and so. You know, they really and truly have allowed it to become antiquated, and it could have been a contributing factor, by the way, to what happened in D.C. They're not sure yet, but go ahead, Bill.
One thing that everybody's promised, it was promised during Obama's three terms and whatnot, is that we are going to redo. I mean, Trump wanted to redo it, but he got blocked in every road. He wanted to sit there in his first term, wanted to rebuild our entire, you know, road system.
Right.
You know, just and we didn't. But it's been promised before him and after him. We have not done one damn thing for, well, as a matter of fact, Obama said, oh, yeah, we're going to rebuild the rail system. That never happened. We've never rebuilt the highway system. We've got probably one of the most antiquated ones around there. So our roads are bad. Our rail traffic is bad. Obviously, our airports need to be updated. And, you know, protocols and safety and equipment needs to be. We have... We're a third world country in control of the world. It doesn't make sense.
Well, we have a new leader, and I'm convinced that what he's done so far is just a fraction of what he has planned. And I'm not the only one who believes that. I'm going to play a cut in a few minutes. Mark Halperin agrees, but I wanted to play. Yep. Bill, I wanted to start the show off with, and we can get back to the air traffic control a little later on, but. I thought you'd be interested in this because I know how important straws are in your life.
This is an executive order relating to the use of paper straws. As you've consistently identified, nobody really likes paper straws.
Number one trending. Can you believe it? A paper straw was number one trending for 3 days or something.
The environmental impact of plastic straws versus paper straws is entirely unclear. This has cost both the government and private industry an absolute ton of money and left consumers all over the country wildly dissatisfied with their straws. So we're asking aspects of the federal government, federal departments and agencies to look at their existing procurement processes, and we're asking your domestic policy council to look holistically at this issue to address it, and it really is something that affects ordinary Americans in their everyday lives.
We're going back to plastic straws. These things don't work. I've had them many times, and on occasion they break, they explode. If something's hot, they don't last very long, like a matter of minutes, sometimes a matter of seconds. It's a ridiculous situation. So we're going back to plastic straws. I think it's okay. And I don't think that plastic's going to affect a shark very much as they're munching their way through the ocean.
Okay. Anyway, plastic straws are back by executive order. I like that. And, you know, one of the guys standing behind the president was chuckling. So they know that there's a certain amount of levity involved with that executive order. But, you know, some of these, paper straws, he's right. You know, if you had something hot, you might as well flavor the straw and make it an ingredient because they become soggy and fall apart, you know?
Well, what's the environmental argument for paper straws? Because what do you use to make paper straws?
Well, I mean, you use wood, you know, it's made out of paper.
It comes from
trees.
Yeah.
And not only that, but people forget about this. At least half of all paper straws come in a plastic wrapper.
Well, and then, you know, what's the impact of wax on society? Because the paper straw has to be reinforced with something.
Right.
Wax.
No, I think that, but it's sad that he had to do it as an executive order, you know, because the left was, I mean, they're getting kind of ridiculous.
Well, you know, James Garville believes that. He thinks that, you know, that there's idiot plants in the progressive left that are trying to find all the stupid, you know, idiotic things that they can cling on to. And he thinks they're a plant. And I'm going, no, James, they're actually that stupid. They really are that stupid.
You know, Mark Halperin is a reporter, and he's covered a lot of stuff for a lot of networks. You see him a lot on Newsmax as a contributor, and he does a podcast, and he was talking about the uniqueness of this Trump term. Listen.
I'm paid to not be baffled or speechless. That's been my job. I am baffled and somewhat speechless. I've been thinking in the last couple of days, is there anything in my career as a journalist that I've covered that I'd compare to this? And the answer is no. I've covered, you know, presidential campaigns, governments, Oklahoma City bombing, O.J. Simpson trial. I've covered lots of big, you know, complex stories. I find this to be extraordinary and singular. I think that we're covering and talking about a very small percentage of what's actually happening. And I think for the reasons I've discussed at length in my writing and on Two-Way, this is a unique presidency for so many reasons. And we're seeing the manifestation of that now. It's in some ways like a first term presidency. He's coming in, starting this term with much more energy, momentum, newness and arrested staff. That's not like a second term president, right? You think about the first weeks of the second term of Clinton, Bush and Obama. It's nothing like this for obvious reasons. But it's also is a second term presidency in the sense that he's experienced. He knows more about how to do the job and what he wants. And he also had 4 years off when he wasn't sitting in courtrooms or being shot at. He had a lot of time to think about how he wanted to do this job and how to enact a revolution. And you know, the theater of it and the personality and the historical narrative arc are all, of course, super compelling. But what matters is the real lives of real people and the impact this is going to have on not just American government and the world, but American history. And I think on that score, based on the early returns here after a couple of weeks, this turns the Reagan Revolution into a joke. It makes the notion that George W. Bush came to Washington to really shake things up. There's no comparison what they're doing. And it's some combination of careful planning that was hidden from view for the most part, and ad hocery that is being mostly successful because this is open field running. You know, I'm very reluctant to use sports metaphors, but I think it's the right one. This is Travis Kelce catching the ball on his own 40 and looking around and seeing there's no one near him. And he's just barreling downfield. The Democrats are nowhere on the field. The press is nowhere on the field. The liberal interest groups are nowhere on the field. And they're the reasons for their being so ill prepared, I think, will be studied eventually. But the reality of it now is I've never seen anything like not just the activity, but the inability of his opponents to forget stopping him. They're barely, with a few exceptions, even slowing him down.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. This is like no other president in history.
And you know what, though? He's pointing out a simple fact that I've always wondered about. And that is, we elect a president. The people elect a president to represent their heartfelt beliefs of the direction of the country. Yet, you know, the other side's going to study to see, you know, why he's doing and how he did this and how he's getting all these policies through, because we couldn't block it. If the country wants somebody to come in and they want his policies, why should the other side oppose it and do everything they can?
It's their job. And also, if they're it's their true belief. They are opposite. They're opponents to what you believe. They're not going to change their opinion because they lost the election. Case in point, look at all of these people who were standing up at the rallies in Washington in front of the Department of Education, and they're down there, Maxine Waters and company, screaming like they won. You know, it's because they can't accept it, Bill.
With that mentality, it is a broken system, because that means
it is.
They're little crybabies. And we're going to do everything we can to upset the apple cart.
Well, they've already said it.
We don't care about the will of the country. It's what we want. Yeah, I know that. And I'm saying they need to be voted out because, okay, you have a difference of opinion, but the majority just ruled. The people came in and said, no, we want these policies.
Yes.
And that means if I were a Democrat, I would sit there and say, okay, you know, this is where the people want to be. It's now my decision has to be, do I meld over or do I step aside saying I really can't get on board with that?
Well,
you know, but it's not my job to obstruct.
No, it is. They think it is their job.
Their job. It was never written into.
We talked about Andy Kim yesterday, for example, the senator from New Jersey, and how he was telling people, well, if we can't do it, we'd have to go in the streets and essentially revolt, physically revolt against the opposition. They don't think they lost. Okay.
Well, then what I would say to Andy Kim, if that is your feeling that you have to come and revolt against us, then I would say to, you know, all of us that are standing firm, say, you know what? We fight back. And you're saying you want a constitutional revolution. Let's just admit what it is. And you know what? Let's go out and punch it out on the street and look like a bunch of idiots for all the world to see.
I think you speak for yourself. I mean, I think that in our world, they would love nothing more than to have us respond with kind, meaning in the same fashion that they want to. They want to incite a riot. You don't riot because they want to incite it, okay?
Well, they think they're going to win that situation. What they have are judges in place, and they're using that now to do all the lawfare.
Well,
at some point in time.
Let me tell you, people wondered with this George Soros funding for all these corrupt judges, what it really meant. Well, now you see what it really meant. For example, Judge Amy Berman Jackson ruled, listen, in favor of fired Biden holdover. A guy was a special counsel in the White House. He was terminated by the Trump administration. He sued to keep his job. And this woman said to the administration with a temporary restraining order, for the time being, you can't fire him. Wait a second. That's one person. Then the Trump administration has filed an emergency motion to vacate Treasury's restraining order. A judge issued a restraining order against the Secretary of the Treasury, telling him that he couldn't look at the data in the Treasury Department.
Right.
Think about that for a second, folks. He's the head of the Treasury Department, but a judge is saying you can't look at that stuff. No, this and there's more. There's everywhere you look. There's a judge in Rhode Island that issued a stay of. Here's the thing that they've got to do. I was listening to an attorney yesterday, and he said, "Listen, they've got to file an emergency motion against these judges. Go right to the Supreme Court, and say you've got to rule on these judges." They're stepping out of bounds. The power of the executive branch is separate and it is distinct, and it can't be infringed by judiciary. Judiciary can't just jump in whenever it doesn't like an executive order and say, you can't do that. That's against the law. You cannot do that. Otherwise, the executive branch becomes neutered. You have got to. So I hope. Now, it says here that they've filed an emergency motion to vacate the Treasury's restraining order. That's probably with an appellate court. They have to probably work their way up to the Supreme Court. But if I were President Trump, I would file today, if he hasn't already, an emergency motion with the Supreme Court to get a ruling to cut this crap out.
You work for the federal government, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, it's like any job. Unless you have a contract, I have a contract. It's a 5-year deal. I'm a football player.
Right.
I have a contract. I'm a disc jockey. It's a 5-year deal. And there's this, and there's a buyout clause. In other words, if they want to end it, there's a buyout clause. There's a poison pill. But other than that, the contract's in effect. But these people are employees at will. And gee, having been an employee at will, when somebody comes in and goes, hey, Knight, you're fired. Guess what? I'm fired.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that guy was fired.
They work at the pleasure of the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's plain and simple. Getting a judge to intervene is giving him privileges that he is not entitled to.
These judges are planned and placed stopgaps. Put in place by the opposition, not yesterday, but years ago. They were planted there. They said, look, you got a good job. You're going to get a nice pay, respect. You'll be a judge. But when we call you When the time comes down the road that we need your support, you're going to be there for us, right? Uh-huh. And that's what these people are doing right now. Now,
they're earning their pay. The
other thing they've got to do, I think, and I think maybe Trump's doing this, is he's allowing these people, it's like whack-a-mole. He's allowing these judges to rear their ugly heads and make these asinine partisan decisions that really and truly are against the law. And they're sticking their heads out, and I think they're taking note of all these judges. Do not be surprised if down the road you see these judges impeached. You know, there's not much you can do to a judge, but I believe you can impeach a federal judge. And you may start seeing
this. Go ahead. Should there not be some kind of periodic test to see that this judge actually knows legally what they're doing? A litmus test.
You would think. You would think that would make sense to like have a every maybe 1 or 2 years have a an exam of some kind to let them to see how sharp they are in the current laws. And but then again, you know, even that's corruptible, right? I mean, you get the wrong administration in, and if they want to get rid of you, if you're a good judge, they can say, well, he flunked the test. So
the Department of Testing, which would then have appointees and everything.
Yeah,
there's always, anytime there's power involved, there's going to be corruption. But we've got to sit there and put safety gaps in. And judges shouldn't have a job that's forever. There should be a termination point or a termination mechanism that's there so that if, you know, all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you become a stupid judge or a woke judge, hey, you know what? Hey, you have a nice career in the private sector because you're out of here.
Well, you know, the problem with what you just said is that it makes too much damn sense, okay? And that's the problem. The people in Washington, I think what we're seeing right now with Trump, we're seeing, if not the entire deep state, we're starting to see the scales of the deep state surfacing. You're starting to see the real corrupt part of our government surfacing. We haven't seen it all yet, folks. We have not seen it all, but we're starting to see it. And, you know, case in point, do you hear how much money they've blown in New York City? They have blown, let me see, I have the figure here. It's mind-blowing. I think it's $59 million. Yeah, $59 million last week. Last week, $59 million on luxury hotels for illegals in New York City. Mind you, this is the same FEMA, right, that can't find the money for the people in North Carolina. They can't find the money for them, but this $59 million that they spent, I'm looking at the headline, spent last week on luxury hotels for illegals in New York.
Yeah, and you know what? They keep spending the money and running the debt up. They like to sit there and, well, there's two things I've heard. Well, you know, this is a president that inherited $36 trillion of debt, and he has to do these cuts. Well, you know, I'm telling you, if he did all the cuts of all the, and they don't want him to see the books of the waste. I mean, if you look at USAID, that was nothing more than a money laundering institution. It would be like a storefront, a cleaners for the mob.
Yeah,
and that's what USAID is doing.
And by the way, they want you to say USAID, but it is nothing to do with aid.
It's an acronym.
Yeah, they want you to think that they're doing something beneficial in this agency, USAID. Mm-hmm. It's the U.S. Agency for International Development. It's a way for our country to funnel money, our tax money, for whatever purpose to whoever they want to without us knowing about it. That's what it is. It's a money channeling organization. I don't want to say money laundering. A money channeling organization for whatever purpose. You know, I figured I would play this, Bill. This is Victor Davis Hanson. He does a little 5-minute narrative about Doge and the left, and he kind of schools the left. Hanson is a smart guy. If I remember correctly, Bill, he was a professor at Stanford, and I mean, this guy, he worked amongst academia of our society, which is notoriously left, and he has always been notoriously right, conservative. It must have been a fun time in the teacher's lounge when he was there. But anyway, he had this to say about Doge.
I want to revisit the hysteria, controversy, whatever term we use, about Elon Musk and his role in the Department of Government Efficiency, or Doge, using that term for the executive officer of Renaissance Florence. The Italian word Doge is a meme, so to speak. There's a lot of controversy about Elon Musk, and let's just dispel some of it right at the start. He is not a freelancer. He was appointed a government official. Donald Trump, by an executive order, created the Department of Government Efficiency, and he made Elon Musk the head of it, along with Ramaswamy, who now has resigned. Elon Musk has statutory authority. This Department of Government Efficiency is not a cabinet agency. He does not have to be approved by Congress, and it only is going to last till July 4th, 2026. It's not a permanent agency, but he has the same power or lack of such as the National Security Advisor, who does not have to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. He's more legitimate, or he has more statutory legitimacy than earlier presidential advisors like Harry Hopkins, who moved into the White House under the FDR administration, or Bernard Baruch, who basically ran two world wars in terms of domestic production under Woodrow Wilson and FDR. So let's just dispel the idea that he's doing anything unusual. As far as the executive orders that created the Doge program and eliminated USAID, that was perfectly legal in itself. AID was created by John F. Kennedy in 1961 by an executive order. There was a statutory direction for the president to disperse foreign aids into a comprehensive body, but it didn't say USAID. He could do whatever he wanted. And so Donald Trump has decided to end autonomous USAID and fold it into the State Department for disaster relief or poverty relief or famine relief. But let's get straight what Elon Musk is trying to do. He's going through all of these agencies and finding waste and fraud, and he has executive authority to do so. The Democrats are suing on the principle that they have approved funds for some of these agencies and Donald Trump is not spending them. And they are also arguing that Elon Musk exists by an executive order and not a congressional statute. And this is very ironic, to tell you the truth. If you look back at executive orders, the number of which have been issued by Democratic and Republican presidencies, you see two general terms. The two Bushes and Donald Trump are not that much different than the 16 years of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Where you see the big divide in the number of executive orders is a break between FDR and Harry Truman, to a lesser extent, Herbert Hoover and Coolidge, and the present. And believe me, during the Roosevelt years and Truman years, that was an all-time record of executive orders. And that got Roosevelt in trouble, of course, with the Supreme Court. As far as impounding funds, Joe Biden set the precedent. You all saw him on tape when he said, SOB, the son of a, I went in over there to Ukraine and I said, you're not getting this $1 billion until you do this. Well, that money had been approved by Congress. And when he became president, there was a statute that said, here's the money to build the wall. And Joe Biden canceled the wall. That was illegal. But he came up with all these, oh, we have to do environmental studies or endangered species, but he didn't spend the money. All Donald Trump is doing is saying, well, I don't believe the Impoundment Act is legal. We'll see if what the Supreme Court, but I'm just following the precedent that Joe Biden did. But now the shoe's on the other foot. And so, again, there is a a statutory authority for Elon Musk to do what he does. He has the executive order justifying his agency, his 20-some employees. And more importantly, there's another thing no one talks about. Elon Musk is a controversial figure, and everybody is attacking him. And whom are they not attacking? Donald Trump. So while the media is trying to make a split, Time magazine had a cover of Elon Musk behind the desk in the Oval, presidential desk in the Oval Office. Donald Trump didn't get angry about that. He said, I didn't even know Time magazine was still in existence. Why? Because Elon Musk, in addition to all of these executive duties he's doing to cut back wasteful spending, he is redirecting animus away from the president to him. And I don't think the left understands that.
That's an interesting final point. Mm-hmm. It's intentional. Musk is aware of the fact the media is going to go after him, and they're taking their eye off the ball, so to speak.
He's got nothing to lose by doing that. He's very theatrical. I think he showed up somewhere in a Santa outfit, you know, to do something. You know, like, what the hell is Elon Musk here as Santa Claus?
I got to ask you. I mean, I look at the past administration, not just as a bad administration, but I truly look at it as a traitorous administration with what they... And not forget Afghanistan. It's hard to say that. I don't forget Afghanistan. That was a tragedy, how he got out of that. But merely on the border alone, what he allowed to happen at the border alone, was that not traitorous? Was that not treason? Did what he do at the border, wasn't that maybe the worst piece of treason that's ever happened in our society? Let's say hypothetically, sometime down the road, God forbid, there's a major attack on our country by elements that came across the border. Is that not a direct result of what Joe Biden did?
Oh, I would say so. But, you know, there's a lot of examples of things that could be treasonous. You remember the balloons in 2023 that
flew over? Absolutely, Bill.
They shot one down, and so they had the balloon, and they've gone through and they've engineered it, and they said, wow, there's all kinds of surveillance technology made in the USA, developed in the USA. So they were using our technology to spy on us that can spy on people. So the question is, who opened the door for that technology, knowingly opened the door
and there's
for that technology?
Bill, there's the difference in the presidency. The difference is Joe Biden, he saw the balloons over Montana and allowed them to go over our major military sites, and he didn't take any action until it was off the coast of South Carolina. The difference is Trump would have shot it down over the border of Canada and Montana. Mm-hmm. It would have been over. Bing, that's it.
I would tend to say the technology was given during the probably Obama years, probably has something to do with Obama-Biden or Obama-Biden-Hillary, you know?
Well, it's interesting you should mention that. Lindy Lee is a big DNC backer. And she was on a podcast talking about the previous administration, and she came out and readily admitted that it was Obama's third term. Here's what she said.
Who was running the presidency for the last 4 years? A lot of people say it was Obama's third term.
It was for sure Obama's third term. I don't think that's even a question. I don't think anyone... It definitely was. And that's why you saw Obama fighting for his dear life. Why was he fighting so hard in the fall? Because he was fighting for his fourth term. He was fighting for his own legacy. The relationship between Obama and Biden is most reminiscent of that between LBJ and JFK. JFK had little respect for Lyndon B. Johnson, but he picked him anyway because he wanted to win the South. He wanted to win Texas. But he had very little respect for LBJ's intellect. JFK was surrounded by his Harvard brain trust, and he had immense disdain for LBJ's Texas Hill Country vibe. And that was the same attitude that Obama had towards Biden. Obama thought that Biden would eventually fuck everything up. And that's eventually actually what happened. So, but also he didn't have much faith in Kamala Harris. Before she ascended to the top role, he was vetting people like Mark Kelly and Andy Beshear. Most people, most party chieftains didn't have Kamala Harris as their number one choice. But in the party of DEI, you can't skip a black woman. The optics would have been terrible.
So who was running it? Who are the names?
Steve Ricchetti, his senior advisor, Anita Dunn, Mike Donnellan, Ron Klain, Jeff Zients, Bob Bauer, his personal lawyer, who's actually his personal lawyer, who actually leased a book, basically grifting off his relationship with the Bidens. I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying all this. Please give me credit for it. But these are the people who ran our country for the last 4 years.
That's Lindy Lee, a donor and fundraiser for the DNC and an insider with the right people in the DNC. But she's totally convinced it was Obama's third term, which we talked about. And all those people who were in the Biden administration were put there by Obama, essentially. So they were making the decisions. Mm-hmm. Obama was the guy approving the decision. And I guess Joe is just rubber stamping him and going off to Delaware. So
yeah, you know, he was a president that never seemed to be doing anything,
right?
You know, but he would just put his name on it, and that was it. And was Kamala going to be doing the same thing? Because she really,
well, you heard what she said. She said that they never really were convinced that Kamala was the successor, but in a DEI party like the DNC is right now, they had to go along with it. They couldn't step over a minority woman for another candidate, so they had to take her. They were forced to take her. A lot of bad decisions, and the Democratic Party right now is in it's in a bad situation because they don't seem to know it, Bill. They're protesting and they're screaming, but they don't seem to know that they are in desperate times. Go ahead.
Oh, I think they know they're in desperate times, but I think the difference is, and they know the will of the people. The people don't want this crap. They don't care about that. What they're doing right now is a total analysis. All right, this is where the train came off the track. How do we fix this? How do we fix that? In other words, they're going to reinvent the beast.
So you're saying that as opposed to Trump and the people running the government, they believe that they know better, and they even if they have to drag us kicking and screaming into a different future, that's what their goal is.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So they're going to go, okay, this is how Trump was able to upset the apple cart. So they're going to rebuild their apple cart to carry all their rotten apples in the nation down the path, because we all know that at some point in time, they have an agenda, and what America is going to be the role model of the future.
Yeah,
but it's just what that future is. Is it going to be the future that you and I and President Trump and the American voters, the majority of, believe, or is it going to be euphoria.
We can answer that.
Think it should.
We can answer that question in 60 seconds. But first, I think it's important we talk about our delicious Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
It's a magnificent cup of the finest blends of coffee beans. It's a medium roast blend and a medium decaf roast blend. You'll love it. You got to give it a try. You can find it in our rightsideshop.com, rightsideshop.com. It's there right now. Also, we have a brand new blend of coffee that we're marketing. It's called MAPA, M-A-P-A. Mm-hmm. And you should buy it just for the bag, because the bag itself is unique at the very least, wouldn't you say?
It's very unique, and I know there's another unique offshoot of it too, of the MAPA brand.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah.
You have the inside track on something else coming along down the line? You have all this neat information. Nobody tells me anything. You know, they treat me like a mushroom around here. You know how they treat a mushroom? They keep me in the dark and cover me with manure.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, yeah, usually for a mushroom to grow, you've got to live under the poop.
That's true.
Well, you know, it's raining poop around it. I saw some artwork the other day. I guess they still got to work on it, but...
You got to check it out. If you haven't gone to our little, storefront, online storefront, you might want to visit it sometime today. It's rightsideshop.com, rightsideshop.com. And, of course, we're the only brand of coffee that employs that fantastic musical group, Juan Jose and the Border Crosses, straight from the Tijuana jail. Guys, if you would.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
They sing that, and they race right back to their whatever they're drinking over there. Oh, it's coffee. Okay.
I heard one of their original recordings. But anyway.
But they kind of screamed it, didn't they? It was more
they did.
Aye, aye.
Yeah, they really did.
I've heard that.
But they've really perfected their tonal qualities and really got it down and together for Right Side Coffee. And we appreciate that, guys.
Question. Joe Biden and some of these Democrats, will they ever face justice for what they've done?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I'm not the one to answer that question. In my world, I think we should. I think number one, the Democrats are throwing the judges out there to stop anybody from seeing the payouts, the books. They do not want you to see the money. They got to hide the money because, you know, or they've got to sit there and find a way to make it Trump's bad. Because if they don't and we see it, then the jig might be up and that they could be, you know, in for some hard times. But I think it's already up because people are seeing just the tip of the iceberg, that they've seen money going to, they went to what? And it's because it's our money that they're spending.
I saw a poll yesterday, Bill. 53% of the country says Trump is doing exactly what they want him to do. Highest ratings ever.
We're $36 trillion in debt, and already we found about $3 or $4 trillion of waste. So theoretically, and I don't think even Trump dreamed that there could be $33 trillion of waste. I mean, there's a lot of theories about there about how we could get rid of the national debt. But, you know, you might want to get rid of the bad spending first because look, there is enough money floating around in the American economy. You and me, the people, actually have the money to pay off that debt.
Well, Bill, when the Doge team found that FEMA spent $59 million last week, the next question is, you multiply that times 52, how much money is that? I mean, are we spent? That was just in luxury hotels in New York for illegals. Think of the money we blew in New York this past year just putting these people up. In the meantime, like we said before, you have people who need the money in Southern California and in North Carolina and Georgia and places like that that have been decimated by the hurricanes. And they haven't got the funding? Something's drastically wrong. You know, we have Joe Biden's FEMA being instructed to ignore the homes that have Trump signs on the lawn down in North Carolina. Yeah. I mean, that's an order from a FEMA. Someone in FEMA thought that's a great idea. We have got, what Trump is doing right now is he's cleaning house and they can't stand it in Washington. Well, sorry, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, I also read, Bill, where 60,000 plus people have taken him up on that early retirement, 8 months pay, over 60,000.
And that gets back to my point earlier, you know, it's like, you know, the judge is going, oh, no, you get to keep your jobs. And I would just sit there quickly if I were Trump. Now, I'm sure it's not as easy as I would say, but I'm sitting there going, hey, you know what? You're an employee at will. You know what? You're right. You can come back in, but you're eventually going to lose the job, but the deal's off.
Yeah.
So you hang around, you've chosen, you've made your decision, and legally, so, you know, do you believe that judge is going to keep your job? Or do you believe that, you know, we're not going to win, you know, or do you believe we are going to win? Either way, the deal is the deal. It's like Trump gives you, he'll throw you a bone. He threw him a bone. I think it was a pretty fair bone. What is it, 8 months? Severance?
8 months. 8 months severance, yeah.
Have you ever gotten, unless Never. You got it in a contract buyout, you know, you got two weeks. If you had a union contract, yeah, you might have had a little money here or there. But
if you had 3 months in the private sector, that was an amazing buyout, you know.
But, yeah, everybody wanted that deal, but you don't have it. You know, there was the thing with Israel over the weekend. Trump, he got tired of it and said, well, you know what? And you could see him. He was thinking on the fly, and then he kind of resolved right into it. He goes, yeah, Saturday at noon, hostages all back, not one here,
well,
three
you know
there,
why?
Two here.
You know why? It's because for no good reason at all, Hamas stopped the swap. Hamas said that Israel was violating the... Mind you, it's Hamas who has the hostages, all right? Israel has prisoners of the war. That's different. They have hostages that they took for no good reason. And by the way, they're coming back emaciated. I don't know whether you've seen pictures of them, but they look awful. A lot of these hostages look like they were in Auschwitz. And they're coming back skeletons. And that means they're not feeding these people. So Trump said enough. And I think that was the deciding factor, besides the fact that they halted the exchange. Trump said they've got to come back. If you've seen them, the hostages, they look terrible. They look sick. They look emaciated. They have to come back. They have to come back. Now, like Bill said, he said, I want them back no later than noon on Saturday.
Or all hell is going to break loose. And you know what? He means that. And, you know, there are pictures of the U.S. deploying hardware, military hardware, you know, across the ocean that is pretty scary looking.
Well, they forget that they still have aircraft carriers and Navy warships off the coast of Gaza. And they're just sitting there. And if all Trump says is nail them, God forbid. And by the way, I think they know where these people are. I think they also know where the leaders of Hamas is. By the way, they have a bad history of hiding the leadership of their organization under hospitals, churches.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'll be right around the corner from where the hostages are being held. It's not going to be an easy thing to extract these people from the claws of these vicious people, but they're going to try. And I do think, by the way, that they also probably got information from the people who've come back, and they probably have said, you know, we don't think there is so many people left. Do you know what I'm saying? I hate to sound negative, but they didn't just come back, hug their family, and leave. I would imagine they would debriefed a lot of them in a gentle way. And they probably have learned that there aren't as many hostages as they say there are. At least, that's their thought. Go ahead.
And that could be another reason for, and I hate to put it this way, that could be another reason for the ultimatum.
Right.
Because the people that are there are basically dead people anyway. You know?
Yes.
Now, if we can get them back, the better. And the sooner we get them to bend, if Hamas comes, okay, look, you know, supposedly we've got this many people, but we really only have this many left. Can we make a deal? Well, let's get these people back before we talk. But yeah, we can talk, but you got until noon. And I would start backing that clock up and saying, well, you know what? Now that we know that, you can still get these people back and we'll talk. But we're going to make it 10 p.m. on Friday. No, let's go with 6 p.m. on Friday.
I think this is why Hamas paused the exchange, because they may not have any more living hostages left. You know, they dribbled them out in threes. And they did that for a reason, I'm sure, because they probably said, hey, we only got 9, maybe 12 people here left. They think that we have 50, but we're going to... We only have like 12 left. Well, then let's stretch it out over as long as we can.
I think they wanted to get as many of their people back as they could, on a very unfair exchange. That exchange is over until they get all the hostages back. And depending on what we get, if we got any missing,
yeah,
you know, I would sit there and say, you know what? Now, I forget how many hostages they had and how many prisoners, you know, Israeli has.
But we were getting three, and they were getting like 1,000 or something, ridiculous figure.
So back. I would reverse that. I would sit there and say, you know what? This 1,000-to-3 ratio, let's flip that around. Well, we don't have that many people. Well, then it's too bad for your prisoners.
What do we get? One American hostage back? I think there are three. We got one American hostage back so far. And Trump, by the way, some reporter said, well, what is Netanyahu saying? He said, I haven't talked to him. I don't know what his plans are. I'm just telling you what my plans are. And that's noon on Saturday. Whoa.
Yeah, this is a showdown at the OK Corral. And I would venture to say, now, I would say there's going to be liberal Democrats thinking that they can use this as a tool. All the humanity. Yeah, the humanity. Let's get real. You know, this is a very egregious act that they've done. And you don't give them kindness and clemency for what they have done. So I would sit there and I would hold true with that noon thing. And once we get our hostages back, you know, I would sit there and say, you know what? Your hostages, they're not hostages. They did some pretty terrible things. They're prisoners of war. And speaking of which...
Well, I want to say one thing. Any organization that has to hide itself behind a mask all the time, in the history of war, in the history of warfare, this is unique. I mean, during World War II, soldiers wore uniforms. You knew who your enemy was. But in the last couple of decades, these terrorists have decided to hide their faces behind masks. Go ahead.
You know, you've got the Gaza Strip there. You've got Palestinians that live there. Not many, but you got some there. And you've got this terrorist group that they don't have. They don't produce anything for the world. All they are here to do is to break things, blow things up, and steal stuff. So Trump's idea to go in there and rebuild Gaza and turn it into a financial mecca, and it allows Palestinians and Israelis to live together there and prosper, and takes out that it leaves that terror group with no home. They got you. Do you know, you go
Bill,
now.
These are the people, though. Here's the problem. I see. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but they've been getting millions of dollars in aid for years, and Hamas has taken that money and not given it to help the people of Gaza, but built their tunnels, got their weaponry, bought the rockets that they fired on Israel. All that stuff was done with aid money that was sent across. Like you said, they don't produce anything over there, nothing. But the thing is, the community that lives there, the women and the men who live there, they have knowingly allowed this cancer to fester in their community. They have voted for Hamas to be running their government. They've got more than just a financial hurdle to overcome. They've got to address the thinking of these people. They've got to go back to the people who've been thinking that it's okay to kill the Jews of the world for no good reason, just because they're Jewish.
I got to wonder, you know, these elections with Hamas, who's in control of those elections? Really? Are the people really voting for that? Or is it just
good
them
point.
Saying, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you have democracy, and thank you for voting for us. See the votes? No, they've been secured or destroyed because we don't want anybody tampering with a fair election. Now, do we? No, these guys have got to go. They only know one thing, and that's it, and that's to be evil. And we need to cut off that money, that funding, and we need to get rid of them because they are bred, and all they know how to do is
hate,
rape, kill, and steal.
Yeah.
So if that's the only, those are your only characteristics that you have to offer.
Yeah, your only qualifications. I know. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely correct.
And we're not going to buy it anymore. Bye-bye.
Another thing to point out today, you know, President Trump was asked about about J.D. Vance being his successor.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
He had an interesting comment. Listen.
Do you view Vice President J.D. Vance as your successor, the Republican nominee in 2028?
No, but he's very capable. I mean, I don't think that it, you know, I think you have a lot of very capable people. So far, I think he's doing a fantastic job. It's too early. We're just starting.
By the time you get to the midterms, he's going to be looking for an endorsement.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that this has been the greatest opening almost 3 weeks in the history of the presidency.
That's probably been the fastest and the most stuff.
Well, we've done so much so fast, and we really had to because they have really, what they've done to our country is so sad. It's so sad. We're going to be bigger, better, and stronger than ever before.
Well, here's the thing. People say, he didn't say he was the successor. Well, I think that's a smart move on the part of Trump. There's a lot of people. Look at Marco Rubio. He's over there. He's going around the world making all of these decisions for the U.S. He may be a perfect candidate. But the thing is this. Trump doesn't want to endorse anybody right now. Because, like he said, it's the beginning of the race. You know?
Right. Well, yeah, because number one, it's classic Trump. You know, he's doing a great job. Don't sit there and put the brakes on the Trump train right now. Because he's just getting in because people are going, well, you know, if for him to do that would be, that would make him a lame duck president.
Well, he's already looking toward the next administration. That's nonsense.
Yeah, no, you don't do that. And you keep everybody on their toes. You're doing a great job. Keep doing that great job. We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
And you know what? We already know Obama had a third term. There is talk that, and look, it's coming to light. That obviously, with that admission from Lindy Lee, at some point in time, the can of worms is going to be opened that they stole the election. All right? And so he didn't get to do what he needed to do. And if he's capable of doing it, even if it's a shortened term and they just extend this by an extra 2 years, would that not be the right thing to do? And then in comes Rubio and Vance and they might be.
He thinks enough about J.D. Vance to make him his successor should anything happen to him. So that should say something right there. But he's not going to endorse anybody right now. That'd be stupid. By the way, I don't think Biden endorsed Kamala less than a month into his administration.
Yeah. Well, it was to me. It was a dumb question. And,
it was.
Who had that question?
Oh, I have no idea.
Brett Baer or something like that?
Yeah, it was Brett Baer. Yeah, it was during his interview. Yeah, well, he...
Yeah, because he kind of is, whether he wants to admit it or not, Brett straddles that fence.
He does.
But he kind of leans to the left, and he just needs to come clean.
I understand he made a lot of money during his last contract. And Fox News at the very top is not the conservative operation that they'd like you to think that they are.
Yeah.
By the way, their ratings are through the roof again because they present themselves again as being conservative. But back in 2020, they were dancing towards the center, you know, dancing toward the Democrats.
I will say this about Brett Baer. I think he is a good communicator, but I do think he leans left. And he needs to go look in the mirror and slap himself, and not in a silly way, but just say, you know what, I may have left feelings, but I got to stay center on this. No opinion left or right. And then he's a great communicator.
Well, I don't think he's going to do that anytime soon.
No, I don't think so, because his heart is left.
It really is. There's a young guy. He's 19 years old, and he is one of the geniuses that Elon Musk hired to be part of the Doge team. Well, the left, apparently, one of his monikers on, I guess, on X or TikTok or something, he goes by the name of Big Balls. That's what Big Balls. So
he likes AC/DC, I guess. Okay.
So the left thought it would be a great idea to mock this 19-year-old genius, right? So listen, this is a montage of how the left have talked about him recently.
Thanks for joining us. We begin tonight with Musk and Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls.
Big Balls, who work for Elon Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, Doge.
In the one case of the Big Balls kid, a literal teenager.
Big Balls online. Big Balls here that Katie's talking about.
A 19-year-old that goes by the username Big Balls.
So that would be one way that we could refer to him.
Young computer wizards, whizzes, the aforementioned Big Balls.
Because who among us doesn't feel better about Big Balls?
Big Balls.
Big Balls in charge of America. Air traffic control.
Okay, so they all had fun mocking this 19-year-old kid. By the way, they talk about it like, well, he's 19, he's not qualified. Well, first of all, he's a genius. Secondly, when you're 19, you're at least a year older than you have to be to join the military and get killed. So, yeah. I mean, these people, they have no shame. None at all. Now,
well, what I will say for Big Balls, at least he's got him.
Yeah, well, let me tell you what also happened to Big Balls. This young man, this 19-year-old guy, he was appointed to a position, a very good position, in the, I believe it's the State Department, the State Department Bureau of Diplomatic Technology. He has a critical job there. His name is Edward Korestein, who briefly worked for Musk's brain chip startup, Neuralink. He's goes by the moniker of Big Balls, I guess, and he has been appointed. Well, if you know, you're gonna make fun of him because they kind of volunteer. You know, these kids they're so young and so enthusiastic. They were all given like cots, and they would sleep at the places where they were working. You know, they didn't even have hotel rooms. They would go into USAID. And start working on their stuff, and they get so into it and finding all this stuff out. Because these kids are the kind of people that they can tell where the corruption could be found. They know, Bill, you have a son who's a gamer. I say a gamer, and I mean that with respect, because it's essentially somebody who knows computers and has a feeling for computers. That's what this kid is. This kid knows computers and how they think and how they work and how you can use them to get stuff. And they were getting stuff, the $59 million a week. They got that stuff. Doge found that. This is a group that's only been in operation for what, 3 weeks? Anyway, now he's got a real job. They took him from a volunteer appointee to a real job in the State Department, where he's going to work on improving their technology, making the government more streamlined, more efficient. So they can mock him all they want, but this young 19-year-old, he's ahead of the curve. I would submit that he's probably, I don't think he, did he go to college? Did he graduate from college? He's probably so far beyond what he would learn in college, that would slow him down, you know?
Well, he probably did, but, you know, with what's out there today, they don't teach it. And so these kids have figured it out on their own, and they're going to be the future professors of technology that's out there now.
Well, I also think that, I think you're going to find out during the next 4 years, there's going to be a whole new reevaluation of our educational system. We've made it so that we have given a stigma to kids who decide not to go on to college, who go in another direction because their interests lie in another direction. A very simple case in point, but a lot of young people love to want to be a carpenter or want to be an electrician or a plumber or a heating and air conditioning person. And they were always kind of minimized, except in real life. In real life, they were the ones who, when they were 21 or 22 years old, had no debt and an income of maybe six figures a year, some of these kids. So who was the dummy there? We have a system right now that you're not qualified unless you have a degree. You know, I'll point this out, and I don't mind saying this now because I do have my degree now, but for most of my career in broadcasting, I didn't have it because I left college to go into broadcasting. I was too enthusiastic about radio, and I was having some success, and I went off and got into broadcasting, and thank God I did because I had a good career, and life had been good. But then, like, over the course of my later years in life, I decided, well, I think I'll see what I can do this, and I got my bachelor's degree. Never needed it. Never needed it at all. As a matter of fact, I look at it, it's on the wall. The most it's done for me is gather dust, because all of my career was done without it. And but nowadays, this is the point I was going to make. Nowadays, if a young man or woman wanted to get into broadcasting at the lowest level, most of the time now they say, well, do you have a degree? And do you know how much they need a degree to be a broadcaster? None. They don't need it. They do not need it. And in all honesty, it is wrong and a disservice to these people to exclude them at this point because they haven't got one. A degree doesn't give you that ability to be a talent, you know, and it doesn't give you the ability to be a plumber or an electrician. You know, I mean, this is, we've got to turn our educational system inside out. Do you have to burden your youngsters with $100,000 worth of debt to start their life off? I mean, some of these kids are, they graduate from, let's say they go on to law school or something like that. Some of these kids get out of school and they've got $150,000 debt and they haven't even got a job yet. And is that helping our society out by having these people burdened by all of that nonsense? The answer is no. We have got to make it so that if a kid goes out and does something different other than going on to college, if it betters their life and makes them a better person and makes them a success, God bless them. But in the world we live in right now, and it's because it's a business. These universities have made it so...
They make money.
They've made it exactly. They have made it so it's a requirement necessary. You know?
It wasn't that important to have that degree when I got into radio. As a matter of fact, it was, you had to go get your license, a federal license, yep, which it. Now you don't need. You would apprentice. You would go somewhere. Yeah. You might go to a school of broadcasting just to learn the basics and know how to go in and basically just run the stupid equipment that you have to have there, which has changed over the years. I've gone from, you know, the queuing up the records and to the tape decks that we would use, the cartridges that looked like an 8-track, and they would play the song through and then stop at the beginning again, to where we went digital. I remember, you know, doing that. As a matter of fact, out of Pittsburgh, you know, if you look at history, will bear out that I happen to have the first radio station that ever broadcast on the internet. Pittsburgh is a home of first. KDK, the first radio station. The rock station I had, first one to do the internet thing. But the industry has changed. Now you could sit there, if you could own the music royalties or, you know, to play it, you could sit there and program a radio station right out of a closet in your house.
Yeah.
And it's that simple, off your laptop.
I have met in my lifetime some of the smartest people I've met in my life. I don't have a degree. They are people who have been self-starters, self-motivators, have gone on, and they're thinkers. They are naturally born thinkers, and this is the difference. We've got to stop this, putting the stigma on our young people. We've got to encourage them to be the best at what they can be. And if what they want to be takes them in a different direction than a school, than a university, well, that's so be it.
Power to them.
Yeah, as long as it has a solid pathway to wherever they're going. Do they want to be an electrician? Do they want to be, do they want to? And there are some jobs, by the way, that they're saying that you have to have a degree. They shouldn't have that requirement. They shouldn't put that. Go ahead.
There are people in the, they get a business degree, business management, but they paid for that degree. They put in a lot of hard work for it and they get a job because of that degree. Well, you know, they got a degree in this. Maybe they should manage the business. So now all of a sudden they know degrees. So they might be hiring, you know, well, we need a broom sweep. Does he have a degree? Does he know which way to push? We want a broom sweep with a degree because right. I had to get one. So he's got to have one. You know, no, he doesn't. He's just got to be a person that knows how to push that broom. You know, the same thing that with radio.
Look, case in point.
Do you know how to talk? Do you know how to communicate?
Thomas Edison, no degree. A genius, brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of people who have made our world better who didn't come from. I mean, I don't think Henry Ford had a degree. I don't think Henry Ford had a high school diploma, but yet he built one of the biggest car companies in the world.
Was the planet, you know, created in the first? Adam and Eve, did they have degrees? Did their children have degrees? As life, you know, moved forward, many of the person that sat there and carved
Adam
stone
and Eve
into
did
a
take, Adam and Eve did take a test and they failed. They said, don't bite that apple, and they failed. But anyway.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, the apple tree test. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. Well, this is because the apple was probably on the ground. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, listen, a reminder, you should try our coffee. We would really appreciate it. Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, available right now at rightsideshop.com. It's a medium roast blend and a medium roast decaf blend. Great coffee. You'll want to give it to your liberal friends because it'll give them the right way of thinking. It'll help them be a smarter person. They'll see the light with Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. Not to be confused with some other kind of Right Side Coffee. It's Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee, only available at rightsideshop.com. Also, we have MAPA Coffee, Make America Percolate Again, which I like that.
Woo.
Yes. We also have the only coffee that has a jingle that's done by Juan Jose and the Border Crosser.
Wake up on the right side with Right Side Coffee.
Make America Great Again with Jim and Bill's Right Side Coffee. And my dear friend, I think, have you got anything else you want to throw in there before we wrap this little show?
No, I think it's going to be an interesting day. I see that, you know, it seems odd to me that it's taken so long for Tulsi and RFK Jr. to get confirmed. Now, I know the Senate has done their final thing. Now there's that, what do they call it? It's a 30-hour wait.
It's really a closure.
It's the closure.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I'm like going, okay, you guys have already figured it out. Let's just, you know, but no, there's that. And what I do anticipate, the left will sit there and go, let's throw some mud on the wall just to see if we can taint, you know.
You know I think the rhinos are misjudging Trump. And I'll tell you why. I think they drag their feet thinking they have more power than they have. And I think that this time around, Trump is making notes, and the rhinos that slow down his administration are going to be challenged next time around. I think he has the money to do it, and the people to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
They're misjudging the man, and they shouldn't do it. They shouldn't do it.
No, they shouldn't do it. And you know what? That might be a time for, you know, young wannabes or even older wannabes to get into politics. Might be time to step forward because they're going to be looking for a few new faces.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that's the fact, Jack, especially if you're just somebody that wants to do the right thing.
I'm with you, though, America. By the way, Bill. I think they know who they're going to vote for. Do the damn vote. Enough of this nonsense. Yeah, get it done.
Get it done. And if we're not going to vote them in, then do that too so we can see who's who because we kind of know. But look, go ahead and show your colors. Yep. Just do what you're going to do. We'll move on, you know, and, you know, we'll at some bus stop down the road, we'll tell you to get the hell off the bus.
Oh, by the way, we may have mentioned this yesterday, but I want to repeat this. President Trump has ordered that the Secret Service provide him with, quote, every bit of information on his two would-be assassins. He wants to see everything. He doesn't want to see little snippets in someone's view. He wants to see all of the documentation, every bit of evidence that they have on Crooks and the other guy, Ralph, down in Florida.
Does he not deserve that?
Absolutely. I thought he would have had it by now.
Yeah. Well, but, no, they seem to shield him from everything. Somebody tries to kill him, and, well, you really don't want to see. You don't have the right to see it.
Well,
the hell he doesn't.
Well, now he has said he wants every single bit of evidence. That's in quote, every bit of evidence. So,
well, they got to hide a lot of stuff because every bit of evidence might give up, you know, some people that had maybe what they thought were good political careers could end with that.
Well, I which leads to another point, Bill. I think you're going to find in his administration that down the road a bit, maybe not too far down the road, some people he appoints are going to be fired quicker than others. Because I don't think he's going to wait around to see them make course corrections. If he puts people into positions and they and they disappoint him, if they don't do what he wants, I don't think he's going to wait around to get them on the right page, so to speak. He'll make a correction because he only is he knows he only has three years and 11 months to work with. He's not, he hasn't got time to screw around with people who are lying to him. I think, and someone said, and it's so true, that right now he's had 4 years to think about this. When he got in the first time, he didn't know anybody in Washington. He made a lot of mistakes with his choices. This time around, he has carefully picked the people he wants in these positions. They're allies and people who think like him. And so far, Bill, it looks like he's made some good choices. Marco Rubio's looks like a terrific Secretary of State. We have Pam Bondi, who she wasn't in office an hour, and she was making good decisions. So it'll be interesting. I could go on and on. I'm done, sir. Anything else you want to say before we wrap this up?
No, I think it's going to be a wrap, so there's only one thing left to do, which is hasta la vista, baby. We're out of here.
This is CRN America.